Lamar.
Remember, if anyone asks, we're a nice, normal talk show. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
Most men like working on things, tools, objects, fixing things. This is what men enjoy doing. Have you ever noticed if a guy's out in his driveway working on something with tools, how all the other men in the neighborhood are magnetically drawn to this activity? They just come wandering out of the house like zombies. Men, it's true. Men hear a drill, it's like a dog whistle. Just, you know, they go running up to that living room curtain. Honey, I think Jim's working on something over there. So they run over to the guy. Now, they don't actually help the guy. No, they just want to hang around the area where work is being done. That's what men want to do.
Kate Daly Show. So happy that you're listening today on a Friday, and happy Father's Day coming up this weekend. Hope you're having something planned and something great, maybe even a great barbecue, who knows. Wishing my own father a great happy Father's Day as well. And on that note, today's show, on the national show too, we're going to be talking about fathers. And we'll take your calls in the last hour, your experiences with fatherhood, your experiences when it comes to masculinity and talking about that. This is your chance to speak out and your chance to be heard. And I really love that because I like celebrating men and I like celebrating what men are all about. So we'll be talking to Dr. Warren Farrell and his book, Boy Crisis, and also what men really want you to know. So he'll be fantastic. And then in the last hour, I'll take your calls. Also, Flag Day. It's Flag Day. And there's a huge display, a field of flags. And, of course, the proceeds go to the veterans. You might want to go check it out. It's a beautiful sight. My own father played the bugle for that this morning. So what a great day, right? Flags flying everywhere. It's a beautiful sight. And we have a great guest in this hour. And I really, really am excited about this because as I talked about primary water the other day on the air, and then, of course, a couple days later, an editorial comes out from a local legislator talking about the pipeline, and the pipeline kind of being the exact opposite of really going after that primary water. And it's been interesting. Lots of comments and emails, and I so appreciate that because I think people are just unaware. But I would like to introduce Mark Burr to the show, who is going to have so much more to say and educate me and you and all of us on primary water, as he has extensive knowledge about this area. So this is going to be so enlightening. Welcome to the show, Mark Burr.
Hi, Kate. Thank you for having me on. I've done about three or four radio shows before, and I love it.
Awesome.
It's probably the last great place of open minds and
yeah.
In our current media environment. So it's great to be on.
I agree. Believe me. So we're like the counter anti-media just because of the mainstream and the job that they do. And that, you know, it trickles down. Even in local, I find a lot of publications supporting this pipeline. And it feels like all the people in leadership support this pipeline. And I've always thought there was a better way to do this. And so I can't wait to get your take on this. And for somebody that, let's just dial it back for just a moment. Tell people just about you and about what brought you into this arena of primary water.
Well, I like to tell people that by the time I started first grade in Eugene, Oregon, I'd lived on five continents. Mm-hmm. So I came back, and there I was sitting in a classroom. They were speaking English, and they all looked like me, and I thought that was kind of strange.
I bet.
I born in Guatemala and lived in Central South America, then over to Africa. Europe, and then off to the Philippines and back to the States. My father started in pharmaceuticals and then went into aid work with CARE USAID, and then ultimately ended up getting his PhD in geography from University of Oregon, and ended up at the State Department for many years and traveling around the world from there as a diplomat. So I've kind of followed in his shoes, I suppose. I went into international business myself, and mostly Latin America, Middle East, exporting American-made products before
right.
we got hammered by NAFTA and all of that in the 90s. Worked for some big companies overseas as country manager, and then got pulled into the vortex, otherwise known as Iraq, in 2004 to 2006 as a temporary diplomat advisor to the Ministry of Industry and Minerals there. and left that, decided not to go into work for myself, and did a lot of consulting, and mainly in the Gulf and Saudi Arabia and other places. Mm-hmm. And about 2011, I had hooked up with a Wall Street firm, and they always told me, Mark, you travel the world, keep your eyes out for anything in water.
Okay.
You know those guys. Water sure, to them sure. is the next black gold, and if somebody mm-hmm. can figure out how to commoditize it,
right.
We actually may have more than we need. But so I was in contact with a Californian who pitched me the story that you know of, mm-hmm. of Stephen Reese,
yes.
and the pioneer of primary water, starting in the 1930s, creating this concept of primary water. And they wanted me to go actually to Saudi Arabia to kind of reprove it again, because Steve had been in Israel, Egypt, Saudi mm-hmm. Arabia, as you know, and to go out there, prove it again. And for really the third time, there's a big, big effort being made, I would say, right now to
right.
come back and try to talk to the authorities that you're mentioning yours between mm-hmm. conservancies and towns, cities, states, and all the way into the federal government to try to get them think differently
right.
about water. And so that's kind of my background. I took that idea that they brought and ran with it. I took it to Kurdistan, of all places, first, because
wow.
it was northern Iraq. I know the country well.
Mm-hmm.
It was going through an oil and gas boom. The Kurds love Americans. Erbil is considered the Dubai of the North, and I just returned from Baghdad, Karbala, and Erbil, in fact, a week ago, and trying to be a part of the people that are now, once again, post-ISIS,
mm-hmm.
Trying to, make all our blood and treasure that we spent there worth something, and that make them our allies, and look for, obviously, business opportunities there. And so I went there at the time and started to learn, understand water, drilling, lectured at universities there across the Middle East. And honestly, Kate, it was amazing. PhDs, many who had been studied here in the United States mm-hmm. and in Europe, were aghast. After I exhausted every question they had, they would come up and say, why don't we know about this?
Right. Right. And I think a lot of people wonder, why don't we know about this? And you'll get, obviously a lot of questions. I have some questions for you. People have chimed in, even those that disagree with primary water. And so I think for somebody listening in that's never heard of this, can you give us sort of the basic explanation? Because they really are pushing this pipeline hard. And I would like to hear from you what your basic explanation of this would be. Primary water.
Sure. And I've worked, and we'll talk about this, mm-hmm. I'm sure, in some depth. I've worked now quite a bit in southwest Utah over the last couple of years and mm-hmm. the Arizona Strip and more in Arizona, California, a little bit Colorado and New Mexico. So I'm originally West Coast, California, old pioneer family. So even though I didn't really grow up there, I knew a lot of the politics and politics mm-hmm. of water. And so I've presented and shared these ideas in Cedar City mm-hmm. to both conservancies. So they know about primary water now down there in southwest Utah. Ranchers I've worked with out there on the Strip, a number of various county commissioners and larger farmers there, trying to teach them a new way to think about water. Some level of accessibility, visibility, mm-hmm. I think, from state side now on what we're doing amongst representatives and water authority experts. So primary water basically mm-hmm. is the concept that hydrogen and mm-hmm. oxygen combine under the electromechanical forces of our Earth mm-hmm. to produce H2O in all its phases.
Okay.
Water is that unique substance that has liquid phase, the one we drink and are desperate for. It's in gaseous form, water vapor, right? Mm-hmm. When we have hot lung, we breathe against a cold pane of glass, we see transition from vapor to condensation, liquid.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the water of our inside of our Earth is actually rising as vapor, and as it cools in the crust, it liquefies. So they are seeing recharge in deep wells, where we're having to drill deeper and deeper around the world in many cases, recharge that cannot be any logical explanation that there's any seepage down 500 plus meters, 2,000 feet, to see recharge in the middle of deserts, for example, in southern Jordan, in the
mm-hmm.
DC Aquifer Project, which we can talk about.
Okay.
They're drilling 3, 4, 5 miles in the oil and gas industry. They're getting 4 parts water to oil sometimes.
Hmm.
There's a tremendous amount of water within our crust, and I can go hours of scientific evidence from laboratories, peer-reviewed articles, Stanford, MIT, around the world, Japanese, Chinese, Germans. There is massive amounts of water in the interiors of our Earth.
So,
it's basically a given.
Okay.
But people are still, the scientists, you know how it is.
Yeah.
If they're not that brave, sadly, at the end of the day, and until there's enough momentum that they can cross swords with whatever academic power that can is be, they are hesitant to actually state these facts.
So here's a question.
The evidence is now overwhelming.
Here's a question for you. Someone might say to you, well, it's too hot for consumption, what we would drill and find due to geological activity. You know, one person said that in Enterprise, this is the case. And even though they're doing it in Jordan, even though they're doing it in the desert of the Middle East, but it, for some reason it wouldn't work here because it's too hot. What would you say to that?
No, it's a good one. I sit here in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia where I live, and I can go to many farmers, small, relatively small farmettes, even just people's private properties. And on that same property, they are here on the slopes of the Appalachian Mountains, you can have four different geochemical profiles from water on their property. You over there, you have this beautiful spring. They'll flow it into a pool so they don't have to use chemicals. Pretty cold water, but it's nice in the summer. It's a profile that is basically spring water. We know what that is. We bottle it, we drink it, people make money on it. Over there, they have a little well that they've drilled for the house. And, you know, they worry about it. They put, you know, a filter on it. They maybe think it's hard water, right? The third one over there, they have a thermal. Yeah, it's coming up hot over there. It's just funny. Yeah, that just over there. And then a fourth one could be another agricultural well that's deep.
So it
and
really
it's all
varies.
Four of those. Take them to your local water tester, and they each have a different profile. Exactly how does that work if we have aquifers of pools of water down there?
Exactly. So it really varies all within certain regions. I mean, you'll find various things just feet from each other, I take it. So,
feet from each other.
Yeah.
We go around the world as primary water well locators and drillers. Paul Power is a disciple of Steve Reese. Paul Power, as you know, is the founder of a Primary Water Institute. He was a Hungarian refugee in 1956 when the Russian Soviets came in there, ended up, of all places, in Ojai, California. Spoke German. Reese, of course, was a German immigrant in the 20s who worked with the Hoover family. Herbert Hoover later and became president. They were world-renowned mining engineers and metallurgists.
We're gonna come right back.
Began to study water.
We're going to come right back in just a few minutes. We're going to go into a lot of detail. Stay on board. You're going to want to hear this. Primary Water, Mark Burr, Primary Water Technologies. Be right back.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
This song when I see flags, it's kind of funny. Yes, you can go down and go down to the field of flags and see some wonderful flag, just an amazing array of flags right now down at Town Hall. I so appreciate you listening in. Of course, you're listening to the Kate Daly Show. This podcast will be available on katedalyradio.com at the end of the show. And also want to mention Auto Body Central. Get over to Auto Body Central, stgeorgebodyshop.com. If you have if you're in an accident, I'd choose them. You can choose your provider, choose them. They do it all. They'll work out a ding. They'll work out, I don't care what your problem is on your car, they can figure it out. 817-0949, they're perfectionists. They're family run and I trust them. They've worked on my own car and they're great. So make sure you get over to Auto Body Central, stgeorgebodyshop.com. Tell them we sent you to. So I have Mark Burr on, CEO of Primary Water Technologies, and we're discussing water because it's so important. And I really want to talk a little bit about the politics of it, if you will, because, you know, they're doing this in countries, other desert areas, and have been for so long. Why are we different? And so I think that's probably a question people are asking out there, Mark.
Sure. No, it's what honestly, worldwide, and I was just telling you, I was in Pakistan about two months ago. I met with the head of the Institute of Geology at Punjab University. He had done postdoctoral studies at Berkeley. Open-minded guy, and so he'd been to California. And he said, Mark, at the end of the day, here in Pakistan, we survive on five rivers, and our whole development policy has been based on the same hydrology and hydrogeology as developed in California. Bang, at full stop. He's referring to, of course, 100-plus years ago in California, the beginning of the building of dams and aqueducts to serve ultimately Los Angeles, but farmers along the way and other communities. So water in the West, the whole water scheme, water laws, the water paradigm is based on scarcity. Okay, naturally it looks that way. You're in the desert, doesn't rain that much, and you have these beautiful rivers. At the end of the day, even if there's scarcity, there's only so much water you can take from these rivers. Putting global warming, cooling, climate change aside, there's only so much. We have two, three, four times as many people out there as 100 years ago. More people taking a little offtake here, a little offtake there. There's less. It's a fact. So there have been people drilling wells, though, for a very long time. Steve Reese, prominent among them, who started to realize, I'm finding water that of a completely different chemical profile that is never hit the atmosphere. Where is it coming from? And he realized it's being created in the earth. And as you've read, these ideas go back to the Germans 500 years ago and to the Greeks over 2,000 years ago. The Germans called it halitus. Right, that vapor coming up and out. So that is proven now. It's absolutely proven. They're talking about a layer of hydrous zone 400 miles deep in our Earth. These are geophysicists. These are people taken seriously. They publish their studies. Our satellite imagery and our technology is getting better every day. They flat out have explained this. The Japanese and the Canadian laboratories have proven exactly the pressures and temperatures of which rock is pulled out of our basement rock. That was the third phase of water I didn't mention. We think of third phase as solid, as ice. It's also our crystalline bedrock basement. So when you take granite down to the equivalent of 9 miles of pressure and temperature in a laboratory, you get 9% water. That's a lot of water out of a rock. You think there's zero in it.
That's
all of our rocks, in fact, have water in them because they're made out of a solution, not a melt. Magma would make everything glass. So out of a solution, you can create rocks. That's why many rocks literally have water inclusions in them. You can go to rock shows and see the water trapped in there. How could it be trapped in there if it was thousands of degrees Celsius? It would have been burned out. We have massive amounts of water actually down there. A lot of it's probably in ice form and not magma, which is a theory that's not been proven. But let's not get too far off and scare people. But the fact is they're getting closer and closer to proving that actually. So there's a lot of water. They know it at least at 400 miles. The drillers
water,
of oil know it at 5-6 miles. But we have a legal regime that has affected much of the world out of California based on scarcity. Let's take a second to say, and by the way, the engineering firm that was part of the Metropolitan Authority of California was who? James W. Montgomery Engineering, and his DNA is what? MWH Global, M is Montgomery, W, Watson, on around the world. I went to, I was called by Colorado, Castle Pines. They came out there, said nobody's thinking differently. We tossed our whole water board. They sold us some $120 million idea called renewable water. Renewable? They were taking water from somebody else's river because it's renewable. It rains over there, right? And they were going to raise a $60 million bond, and people finally said, it's a wealthy community. Even those people don't want their pockets picked at some point. So they said, we're ready to listen to you. Who was their engineering firm? They're owned by MWH. So those folks, God bless them. America has some of the best engineers in the world. I've seen things done around the world that you cannot imagine. I've also seen them utterly fail in Iraq. And three of the four primes in Iraq were from the California five companies that built the Hoover Dam that are still out there today. Great companies, old thinking. Water hydrology is a sector in desperate need of new thinking, and that's what we're bringing again in the primary water world, and we're starting to bring a lot more technologies and a lot more supportive science that is out there from very credible sources.
Right.
So you've got interests wherever there's scarcity. You've got scaremongers of scarcity on one side, and you've got interests who like the old way. Take oil, for example. Peak oil was the scare of the time. Mm-hmm. We'll never only have a limited amount. Mm-hmm. Guess what? New technologies, new thinking. And by the way, similar science as to what we're talking about in water, they're seeing now in oil and even more so in outgassing. Mm-hmm. Outgassing natural gas. What else is outgassed? Water vapor. We can see it on satellites now. Whenever there's tectonic activity, we can literally see it being shot out of the earth. Not just a volcano doing vapor, but areas, cinder cones east of Flagstaff, areas in Utah, California. That's the origin, they know this, mm-hmm. of our hydrological system, our rainwater. It did not come from meteorites or asteroids. We've landed on them. Those are heavy water. They've contributed a minute amount, if they did any. It's from inside, along with outgassing of methane, of all sorts of gases. Hydrogen, they're drilling for hydrogen right now in Mali. Okay, hydrogen, why? Because that's the next thing for electric cars is actually hydrogen fuel cell. The community, the what we call the technologists, and businesses are way in advance. And they don't have any need to go share everything they're doing because they're in business for a profit,
well, there's
right?
billions of dollars.
But when you go back to academia and you go to government, who you're mostly dealing with, they're not ready to move yet. But it's going to happen, and it's going to be brutal when it does.
There's billions of dollars being made on the scarcity, factor. And so, you know, it's the water that you're talking about that's underfoot everywhere, we're 70% water. It's what we're made up of on this planet. It's being ignored by geologists, right? And so they were taught that potable water comes from the hydrological cycle, right? Which merely recycles water already on the surface of the earth, right?
Exactly, which is why the textbook, or we call it our primary water textbook, the name of that is New Water for a Thirsty World. We're birthing new water that is adding to the hydrological cycle. It's going on its own. They're proving that now through water vapor and other releases. Obviously, springs that just spring forth on their own versus seeps, which that gentleman mentioned in the email or that was sent.
Yes.
There's a difference between a seep and a spring. There are springs that have been nonstop. And, if you put a piezometer in that and said, well, we're measuring how much water there is based on that, you would say, yes, water's renewable. If you put a piezometer in a dry well, you'll say there's no water. Most piezometers are somewhere in between, but they're often placed in the wrong place, and that's what they base their safe yields on. We have a way to come in and map aquifers using technologies that are out there to better place your piezometers at least for the existing quote-unquote officers, aquifers, let alone discovering and new aquifers where they don't have them on the maps. Hard rock aquifers, fractured rock aquifers. Why are you drilling in rock? Well, there's water in rock if you know where to drill into the fissure, fracture, fault that's bringing it up from deeper sources.
Okay.
This is new talk. It's dramatic. And it's going to take time. But God, I think there's a lot of open minds in Southwest Utah, especially because of the effects of the drought.
Well,
now you've had a great year. You're at 200-300% levels. Guess what? Everybody kind of stops thinking about it and thinks, maybe we shouldn't spend our money on that. Times are good.
Well,
it'll
and
be
I don't
a drought
know.
Again. You live in a desert.
I don't know why, though, because this has been around so long. And all you have to do is look at Israel and Jordan and all of these other places that are doing this. And I don't understand why that isn't even enough for them to say, oh, my gosh, we have desert, too. We're not different.
Sorry to interrupt. Let me interrupt in Israel.
Okay.
They formed the Mekorot, the water company, after Reese had already gone there and showed them how to locate this water that ultimately located enough water in three wells for 100,000 people that led to the development of Eilat, critical port down into Aqaba in the Red Sea. Who did they bring in to found Mekorot, their national water company? A key engineer from California. And they have squashed a lot of the German and East European thinking that was out there drilling the wells for the original settlers that came in. So they're also offenders of this through their water company. Yes, they have technologies, but most of their technologies are trying to get us to take our brown water, our black water, and reconvert it and drink it, which I think you probably know a little about is just not the healthiest thing for our human bodies when you can get high quality, high energy, negatively charged primary water that we've searched for since we've been humans on this earth and protected these waters.
Right.
We can also drill for them and release them. Even Israel has what I call California disease.
Mm. Okay. And then is it expensive to do this?
It's not, because, as you pointed out, in many cases we're drilling not that deep, but in areas where they wouldn't think to drill based on a standard hydrological, geohydrological study. All right, we've gone into the area there in southwest Utah and said, okay, here's your aquifer maps. We want to go into some areas that are clearly rock formations. And you would never say any rainwater would settle and seep into that outside of small amounts. We want to go in and release this water. If you want to keep the old thinking of, well, that's getting there somehow or other, well, fine. How about utilizing that water? Because we don't have to drill that many of these wells at thousands of gallons a minute wells to solve your problem, at least in the midterm. And I've told the water conservancies down there in St. George, other, I'm an all of the above guy. I'm not here to stop anybody to try to prevent them from a pipeline or any technology. But how about all of the above does include modernizing well drilling, because the farmers and ranchers are drilling wells and they're not using technologies and they're not getting help in doing that. So at a minimum, let's come in and revive, like I like to say, make groundwater great again.
I love that. We're going to come right back. We have Mark Burr. I have Mark Burr on talking about. He is the CEO of Primary Water Technologies, and I'd love to know their reaction to this, because as we go off to this break, I wonder if they're listening, and they should be, because it would be a lot less expensive, correct, to do this rather than a pipeline. And so maybe we ought to be looking at other options. I'll be right back on the Kate Daly Show. Don't go anywhere.
There you go.
Hi there. Welcome back. Kate Daly Show here. And make sure you get over to defendingutah.org. Ben will come on the show Monday and share with us his latest. But defendingutah.org, get your father a subscription to that. It's a really wonderful thing. He can also get free front sight time when you do that. And then also some great tools there to be purchased that you can share with your father that would help him be a better citizen overall and definitely get more involved and know exactly what to do to be effective. DefendingUtah.org. It's a great Father's Day gift, actually. I have Mark Burr with me, Primary Water Technologies. And let's talk a little bit about Iron County and how they're embracing some of what we're talking about. Mark?
Yes. So I did want to mention that after 4 years of enlisting in the Marine Corps, I ended up at the University of Utah, Salt Lake City. My first daughter was born at University Hospital. So I have a soft spot in my heart for old Utah, and know a lot of the geography for sure from back in those days. Later on, got my master's at Thunderbird in Arizona, so I know the West pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And so up to talk now more about Iron County rather than Washington County, because Iron County, they removed themselves from the pipeline, as I understand it, and ultimately bought water rights sufficient, they believe, for their long-term needs from Western Beaver County area. But they still have the issue that they need to, I think it's, in the $200-300 million range to bring that, pipe, drill the wells and pipe that and bring it down to the Cedar City area in the central Iron County Water Conservancy District. So, we've been up there talking with them. So that's quite a lift for them as well. Okay. So we've analyzed their map. We've shown where we believe there are at least new aquifers that aren't on their maps where we can locate water that will certainly in the small to mid period before they get the money raised and build that, if they're going to do that, no matter what, and add water and hopefully lower folks' water bill prices. In the meantime, more folks can have their beautiful, pretty green gardens, and on we go. So they're starting to see this as we come out there and show them a different way, a 180-degree different way of thinking about it. This is a sector that needs disruption, like Silicon Valley likes to disrupt certain industries. Uber came in out of nowhere and disrupted the medallions of New York by the digital mafia in Silicon Valley, and it's game over. Before those people could react, we now can just get on our phone and get a taxi when we want it. So this is another sector ripe for disruption because there's almost no thinking. Most people don't realize, end users of water, that your water is probably coming from a well, and 99% of wells, there's literally no technology used in locating it. They'll do a study. They'll bring somebody in who analyzes maps and say, well, we think, again, look up for water, watershed, water table, aquifer, and that minimizes their chances of success. That's their thinking paradigm. We come in and go look down for water, how it rises in a world that's spinning 1,000 miles an hour plus at the equator, which makes us an oblate spheroid, pushing this water out, and up it comes. Why we have springs, why we have artesian wells, we're trying to tap that water. So we come in almost like a oil, gas, mining geologist brain, and start to think about these passageways, these unique areas down there, not just pools of water waiting for us to bring them out, called aquifers. So if you can pinpoint locate and precision drill, as Vern Cameron did in the 1960s in Lake Elsinore, California, when that lake went dry after an extended drought, drilling into a clear cross-fault structure, three wells, each capable of 5,500 gallons per minute, and it could have done more. They did not have a pump capable of doing more than that. They refilled that lake, had to toggle it back so that they wouldn't flood the whole valley, and now you can turn it on and off as needed depending on your rainfall. Those, as you mentioned in your previous cast, were the 8,000 backup wells that Steve Reese said, I can do it cheaper than your Feather River project. Even if you go ahead, you're going to need these backup wells one day, and they've never done it. We can do that same approach across Utah, certainly in Washington and Iron Counties, and when you don't need the water like right now because you had a great winter and El Nino came in, great, toggle them back. They're there. They're available. They're new aquifers at a minimum, and you're not using any technologies. By the way, outside of dowsers, 3 out of 4 wells in southwest Utah, and by the way, most of the southwest, is if you ask them who drilled that one, who picked the spot, it's a dowser. I have nothing against dowsers, but 9 out of 10% of people don't believe in them.
I know.
That's who your specialist, after all their fancy studies, they call their little buddies,
old men, to find them
out here, or and some women are out there doing it. Hey, could you help us decide where we're going to drill? In 2019, I think we can do a little better alongside our wonderful dowsers and show what's going on down below, which are the technologies I bring in with gamma scintillation counters, with passive seismic machines that even folks in the water industry in the States and in the oil and gas have not seen what we're doing.
Okay. So here's a question for you. Can it create a sinkhole if you're using this water faster than the skies replenish it?
I encourage people to go on to Google Earth, look down at those the island on the south end of Lake Elsinore. You can see it. They refurbished it for $1 million or $2 million in 2004. They indicate they still produce 1 billion gallons a year to restabilize that lake. The island's not sinking. The three are in a row, directly in line. They're right on the same fault. It was done as a case point. Someone smart at one of the meetings there at the library in Cedar City, a farmer I could tell, said, why don't they go and turn them all on to see if they're affecting any of the other waters in the area? Because if they did that and not a single other well was affected by it, it would literally undo their whole system. And they do not mention on their extensive website, their history, the drilling of those wells. They will not recognize it, Kate. So this is the kind of thinking, closed minds, in a sector that is so desperate. But remember, peak oil ended in 2010. There was no chance they could ever mention that term again without getting laughed out of
it.
What happened?
It was ridiculous.
Peter Gleick, Pacific Institute, created peak water in a paper. And now everybody's talking peak water.
Yeah, everybody feels like it's a finite resource that's running out when we're 70% water. And so a lot of people feel like, well, this is the subsurface water levels, it'd be difficult to pump it, or you're getting it out of rocks. That would be very hard to do. It isn't that hard, correct? It's not. It's correct. Not. Yeah.
Many times it can come up literally free flowing. We've seen that in Africa. Mm-hmm. You have right water right away, and then you go ahead and put a pump in and do pump tests and see how much you can, pump out of it safely. But yeah, this stuff usually is coming under pressure, allowing for a high static level head, near surface water table, in other words, and it allows for a cheaper pump to put in. The 135 wells drilled by Global Resource Alliance in northwestern Tanzania, where they were told there's no aquifer, were all started by Paul Power, a primary water institute, and they have changed the game in that northwestern area of that country. And we're doing it in Kenya. I just went to Ethiopia with Water Alliance for Africa, mm-hmm. out of Salt Lake City. Kirk Willie out of St. George is their chairman. He's come back saying, we're going there at the end of September, and we're excited.
Yeah. Sounds like it. I'm excited, too. And I know for the skeptical person out there that says, oh, well, you want the contract and not the pipeline. Is there anything in this for you? How do you benefit? Kay Bono, because we always ask that question on the air, right? Motivation.
We have to. And it's kind of funny where people in America, you know, this open market capitalism center go, oh, how are you benefiting? Well, look, everyone benefits. You're right. There are people on that pipeline. Engineering firms and the people on the land are nicely benefiting.
Yeah, a lot of land
deals.
Now,
from our perspective, go for that and do it. And that's a wonderful. We'll drill wells, by the way, along that pipeline and add more water to it. How about that? And there we are working side by side. Mm-hmm. But here's the deal. A gasoline station is at retail. They don't go out and drill their own well. I have a water exploration production model where I go in and pay at our expense and risk for the well drilling, the exploration and drilling of the well. And all I want you to do is buy the water. Oh, how much are you going to charge? You mm-hmm. tell me how much you're going to pay me, and then I'll tell you, great, my contract needs to be 5 or 6 or 7 years versus 1. Pay me a higher amount, I'll be out of your hair in a year.
Right.
It's a simple sliding scale. You tell me what doesn't affect your water bill, and I'll, you know, once you drill it, there's very little maintenance, right, mm-hmm. to the pumps, and on you go. And so that's the model. There's no upstream model. Guess what? People don't realize their water companies, municipalities, are spending precious capital dollars drilling a lot of dry wells or low-performing wells. There was just one done there out in the well field south of St. George toward mm-hmm. one of your reservoirs. I came in with my passive seismic system to show the difference between some of the good wells and the not good wells. And you can see these wells a quarter mile, half a mile away from each other. That's a lot of money to spend when all you did was basically a visual study.
Mm.
No technology. I'm sorry. People need to demand at least take a look in 2019. America's the technology guru country, mm-hmm. and we're not using it for our water.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense.
Well, like you said, going retail on it, I mean, that props it up for control, and that props it up for prices going up. And this would cost so much money. This pipeline is just an exorbitant amount of money. But every single legislator or somebody in power is behind it, which I always find a little interesting when they're all in unison. There's no other choice or option. This is the only thing. And then I want to say, well, who owns land on that pipeline? Of course, that's where my brain goes. But what do you think about that? I mean, I find it strange that nobody seems to be really open to a lot, just pushing.
I found some both past and current conservancy types, commissioners, politicians, mm-hmm. who are actually 100% behind what we're doing.
Oh, I'm so
they
glad.
Understand it's a heavy lift. There's educating. I've spent plenty of my own money and time to go out and get in front of people to educate and go for it. We obviously need to get some holes drilled in the ground, some wells going from private entities or whoever to start proving this out. We have a nice proposal in front of the Iron County Conservancy. We hope they'll pull the trigger. I'm bringing in my California partners on that to really do an interesting study that hopefully leads to some pilot wells for them. Okay. But others will be drilling soon. We've had some good successes in the Southwest, again, as we get going, because I generally work overseas. It can be tougher, but it's sure rewarding in certain communities.
Well, you're all over the world. You're all over the world presenting, and people, there's so many places you can go to find out more information on this and really go through and explain exactly what is going on with primary water and how they do it and whatnot. Primarywater.org is one. Is there anywhere else you'd want people to go, Mark?
PrimaryWaterInstitute.org. My website is PrimaryWaterTechnologies.com. I've got some resources on there, a very long PowerPoint about the history of it and references and links and scientific references. And so there's a lot out there. I encourage you to read New Water for a Thirsty World. Many people say they've read every book about water in the Southwest, Cadillac Desert and all that. They've never seen that book because it was bought up and destroyed near to a copy when it was published in 1960, with the backdrop being that Feather River Project. And Governor Brown, Moonbeam's father then, was not going to have any well drillers get in his way. It's a fantastic book.
Oh, I love that. It became a huge, obviously, water wars. There's a lot of fighting over water. Ranchers, I'm sure, are nodding their heads right now, and farmers listening to this program. We have a lot of them that listen rurally, and I'll tell you, it's about water. So the scarcity in that has presented, for a lot of contention and price gouging and everything else. We have a certainly a situation here where we could look at some options, and it isn't about regulation where the left likes to regulate to death to try it for conservation. There's more to it than that. And I don't want a lot of regulation, but I do want to look at these kinds of options, primary water being probably the most positive one that I've ever seen. And I hope people go and they research this, Mark. I know you're making presentations all over the world right now. And like you said, you're constantly, in fact, you're just about to embark on a trip over east right now. And I'm really glad that you've come on. And I really actually want you to come on again, because now that this has sunk in, I want to even go deeper in our conversation, if you're up for that.
Anytime. Would love to do it. Even if I'm overseas, I can call in. That'd
all right.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark Burr, thank you. And he is the CEO of Primary Water Technologies. Please go to Primary Water Institute, primarywatertechnologies.com, or Primary Water Institute, right? Both of those?
Or primarywaterinstitute.org, primarywatertechnologies.com are two great sites.
Okay. I love this. We need to be talking about these kinds of things, not over-regulation, not a pipeline that they seem to be pushing and just telling us it's scarce. Let's go after really what the issue here is and get down to the bottom of it, literally down to the bottom of it. Right, Mark? So there's so much, God made a great earth, and that water down there is renewable. And I know the left pretty much owns that word, but it's renewable, and you could actually... you can actually grab that water. So thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate you and all your efforts.
Thank you very much.
You bet. And be right back on the Kate Daly Show. Dr. Warren Farrell joins me. A couple of great books under his belt. And we'll be talking about men, fathers, boys, masculinity, you name it. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.